Chops TV.
You will be chopped.
Know what that means? Licking my chops.
Today I will show you how to do a karate chop.
Simply saying, no, he doesn't have the chops to do what it takes.
New thing. I'm busting chops.
Welcome to Chops TV, featuring Jennifer Lopez. Now here's Chops.
As is tradition, Jen, how are you today?
Dude, I was doing fine up until about 7:30 a.m., where then I just continuously sweat quite literally the entire day.
So the first 90 minutes of your day, decent. The extra 10 hours haven't been so hot?
No, too hot. That's the problem.
Oh, that's true. It's summer's here.
No, it's not. It's too early. I know.
When does summer start? What is the first day of summer?
The solstice is the 20th.
Well, that's the middle of summer,
I
right?
know. But
or is that... I don't know. I mean, I know what the solstice means, but I don't actually know, like, what those dates and the actual dates of... You know what? I think...
Yeah?
I think we should get rid of it. Get rid of telling us when the seasons start. It's bullshit. They don't exist. The weather does whatever the hell it wants, whenever the hell it wants. And I'm tired of, like, somebody be like, actually, it's still fall when it's, like, fucking snowing.
Yeah,
so I'm done with it. June 20th? No. Forget it. Summer is not a month away. It's 90 degrees today.
It is a solstice, too, though.
That's what I thought. I thought they were actually linked. So we can still do solstice and equinox and all that stuff. But as far as, like, telling me when the seasons start, no, the seasons start when the weather changes to that season.
Yeah. And the groundhog lets us know even sooner. So
like, groundhog's a piece of really nice work. Love that guy.
It's just not him anymore, too, which is upsetting.
No, they feed him the elixir of life, and he lives forever.
Right.
Aren't you up to date on your Groundhog Day lore?
I think we should just have, like, a new, like, summer animal. You know what I mean? Groundhog's in the groundhog, you know? Groundhog's in the groundhog hole, you know?
Groundhog's in the groundhog.
We need, like, a beautiful... Purse. I have purse.
Groundhog and the groundhog.
No, we need like a beautiful monarch butterfly to flap its wings and let us know that summer has arrived.
I think that's a little too hard of an animal to corral and like get to do anything specific. So I don't know if that one's going to work.
It's more in vain of what you were saying. Just like let nature tell us.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think butterflies exist in the winter. So where would we do it? I mean, maybe they exist in the winter in like warmer climates, but I never see a butterfly flying around here in February.
No, that's true.
And that's when Groundhog Day is in, well, near Philadelphia, I guess.
If we teach the crows English, they could tell us.
Well, or should we just learn their language? Would that be faster?
No, we're American, Mark. We speak English in America. We speak American.
I still think it would be faster to figure out what a bird is trying to say rather than teaching a bird English and then hoping it wants to convey its ideas to you. I think if we teach the bird English, then they're going to teach other birds, and then the birds are going to revolt, and Bo Bishop's nightmare of the birds taking over and following along in the tradition of Alfred Hitchcock, Welcome to Chops TV.
Is Bo afraid of birds?
Bo hates birds. Yeah.
Huh, I didn't know that. I also, too, am not a fan of birds.
Well, remember, he grew up in Montana, where there are, like, real birds, vultures. There's probably like bigger birds on some of the farms. I'm not sure exactly, but like that, like flightless birds that he might be, emus, ostriches. I don't think it's ostriches, but there's definitely experienced a lot of big birds in his life.
Yeah, none of those pussy sparrows.
And subsequently, he does not like birds.
Hmm.
Now, I have a disdain for geese specifically, but outside of geese, birds don't bother me too much.
No, that's fair.
I guess because they're always like flying and stuff and they're up in trees. You're never really close to a bird. So you don't, like, see it, like, nitty and gritty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we talk about...
I don't know. This episode's going to be a little more amorphous because we were on vacation last week, took a couple of days off. It was just a staycation. We didn't do anything crazy, but we were just hanging out. So we did still watch some things, but I was playing Pikmin 4 sometimes. You like to take naps on your days off. So we weren't, like, fully invested in any of these things, but they were stuff that we were kind of interested in. And we said, okay, let's watch these while we're just hanging out at home, and we will combine them into one big episode. First up, Unfrosted. Not only starring Jerry Seinfeld, not only directed by Jerry Seinfeld, but written by Jerry Seinfeld and three other people. He was one fourth of the writer's room. But that really explains it. I knew he was in it going in, but I didn't know he had that much control, and he's like an executive producer on it. And the movie is a two-ish hour long. I mean, it's probably more like 100 minutes long. Like, vehicle for Jerry Seinfeld to just do bits that he's thought of over the last 20, 30 years, I think. I think that's exactly what this movie is. And he did Pop-Tarts because apparently he's really into breakfast cereal. Something I didn't know about him until just recently.
Yeah, I didn't know what this movie was until you had brought it up like last week. But for the last like 3 weeks or so, like everyone on TikTok and Twitter has just been talking like mad shit about Jerry Seinfeld. So I was like, why do we all of a sudden like hate Jerry Seinfeld now? I mean, whatever. He's a fine comedian, I guess. Never truly my cup of tea, but lots of vitriol being thrown his way. Now it makes sense in the context of he was out on the circuit promoting this movie. I thought he was just like coming out of the woodwork like every 5 years and just like saying something like semi-controversial or like what he thinks is controversial and then like hiding away again.
Yeah, he just had the like, I mean, a comedian, an older comedian says it like every 6 months that like, oh, it's so hard to be
you
funny
can't
nowadays.
Tell that joke anymore.
People are too, and it's like, whatever. I have no energy for it anymore. Like, I just don't care. Comedy is a time capsule of its time. It always has been. It always will be. So, like, it's not that comedy changed. It did, but that's what comedy does. So, yeah. In a way, it hasn't changed. Continuing to evolve is comedy being the same.
Yeah.
You're just old, and that's fine. Everybody gets out of touch. Jerry Seinfeld has made millions of dollars for 30 years. He's not going to be the everyman. What's the deal with... He doesn't deal with any of that stuff anymore.
Yeah. And I think that the movie has some of that flavor of like the old comedy mm-hmm. bits that he's been working on for years and just like decided to compile them together.
It was like watching a feature length SNL sketch because of the cast. It's just every comedian you could think of that's over the age of 40 is in it, essentially. Mm-hmm. To name a few, Jim Gaffigan, Amy Schumer, Melissa McCarthy.
Hugh Grant.
I guess he's not a comedian, but I mean, it just keeps going on. And then it also, because of that, I was like, oh, as it went on, we could tell that it was like slightly off reality. And then it gets even zanier as it keeps going. We're like, okay, so this isn't being trying to be presented as like fully realistic. And then it kind of reminded me of both the 30 Rock world because of that sketch comedy factor and that they have like surrealist things kind of hidden under the surface. In 30 Rock, it looks normal at first, but if you're paying attention, you're like, that's not reality. And then also Pee-wee's Big Adventure. It reminded me of that and that zaniness.
You said Anchorman, too. Not Anchorman 2, but also Anchorman.
Well, I was trying to figure out where, like, what it was reminding me of, because it was kind of a specific tone. And Anchorman, I think, is decent for it, but I think I was maybe leaning a little too much on the, this was based in the 60s, Anchorman's from the 70s, yeah. So I think that's why I hopped to that first. I like my mix of 30 Rock and Pee-wee's Big Adventure comparison better.
I think so, too.
Did you like the movie?
I think overall I did, which is weird. I laughed more than I thought I was going to, so I think that automatically puts it in the win bucket for me.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, yes, there has been this trend of these weird corporate, how did a product get made movies. And that's what I thought we were going to get. But I watched the Flamin' Hot one. So I was like, I'll watch Unfrosted too. Plus Jerry Seinfeld. Okay. Like, legendary comedian. What's he got to offer here? And no, it's not that. It's barely about the making of the Pop-Tart because as it keeps going, like there was a point 30 minutes in or so. I was like, well, what part of this is true and what part are they just exaggerating? And as it kept going, I was like, I don't think any of this is true. I don't think they adapted a real life story and made it fun. I think they just made something completely up. Now, maybe they'll say that they took this piece from this piece and this piece from this piece. But I know the inventor of the Schwinn bicycle, spoiler alert, didn't blow up testing a Pop-Tart.
And there's no way that the Post and Kellogg's buildings were like two blocks from each other, like directly across the street.
Or that the filling for Pop-Tarts was discovered by children in a dumpster. At the Post dumpster, and the guy in charge of product development at Kellogg's talked to the children in the dumpster and was like, we need to make this filling. And then they put together that crack team, and they create that ravioli monster. And it's like, what the hell is this?
When the ravioli gained sentience, that was when I was like, fully in, honestly.
That was when weird. You told me to put the video game down.
Yeah, I was like, you need to watch this. It's getting crazy.
It really is. So, I mean, if you just want to laugh and you can ignore the fact that it is a commercial, but it's not as... It doesn't feel as shameless as the other ones. I think they chose a product because this is on trend, but it's really just for the fun and the jokes, which is why it's weird that...
Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
Weird, fun for the joke, zany, with like some very heavy-handed political commentary also.
Oh, yeah. That's like the other subplot with the mascots of all the cereals. And we're going to get replaced. Pop-Tarts doesn't even have a cereal.
Storming the Kellogg's building.
Dressed like the
Viking horns.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. It was. Every like 10 minutes, the movie reaffirmed that, like, no, we can go a little bit further with this. It was, you know, it was close to reality. And then it just slowly, slowly, slowly devolves into this thing that is just, it's like, yeah. It was one of those ones that, like, fell into cartoon territory.
Yeah.
But I liked it.
I liked it.
I liked it for a Netflix movie that I threw on in the middle of the day on, you know, a day off that I had. Not like, you have to go see this movie. But if you were on the fence, watch Unfrosted. It'll likely make you laugh, and I don't think you'll feel like you're being sold to the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is not recommended, and we are not the first ones to say it, but we finally watched Madame Web. And it is bad.
It
was not a mob mentality thing.
I was going to say, sometimes movies like this, especially the blockbuster superhero ones, sort of fall into that mob mentality. Like, one person on Reddit decided they didn't like it and then managed to convince an entire flock of people that they didn't like it when it's a fine movie.
Yeah, because maybe it's not very good, so there's no, like, ardent supporters of it who love it. But no, everyone was right about Madame Web.
Everyone was 1,000% on the money. About Madame Web, and it's bad.
It really
it's
is.
Bad. It is just bad.
It doesn't make any sense to cast Dakota Johnson for the character, too, because Madame Web is supposed to be like an elderly blind woman, and she gets to blind. Spoilers for Madame Web, I guess. She does get to blind at a certain point, but she's never old in it. The Spider Girls are just in like the future things, which is something that people started to report once they started to see it. They're like, oh, we were kind of promised like these Spider Girls. Nah, no. Not really. And then Madame Web eventually can like astral project and follow them around, and she's not actually there. It's kind of unclear exactly how that power works.
She went back to the Amazon
for like a conversation.
Yeah.
Of somebody she knows. Like, they acted like they knew each other. Like at least she, like, knew who he was from her, like, things about her mother.
Yeah.
And it's like, couldn't you have tried to contact him? It's another reason, too. I mean, my guess is this is to match up with future movies. That's not going to happen, Sony. But it's in 2003.
Yeah.
Which is one of those ones, like, it's not quite far enough yet for nostalgia. And it's like, okay, Nokia phones and... I don't know. What else was popular in 2003? Lizzie McGuire? There's no Lizzie McGuire. That would have made it better. There was a Lizzie McGuire reference in it.
Lizzie McGuire as Spider-Man.
There's a pregnancy. She steals multiple cars. It's just like all of... If we were describing Unfrosted as this kind of parade of zany sketches, Madame Web is a parade of almost like nonsensical random scenes that seem superhero-y. And this one, actually, the product placement did bug me. I watched the Pop-Tart movie and was like, whatever. They wear it on their sleeve. It's a Pop-Tart movie. This one, the climax fight, happens in a Pepsi-Cola factory that apparently is stocked exclusively with fireworks. Because as they're fighting, eventually the fireworks get lit, and then they're all flying off, but they're still in front of the Pepsi-Cola sign. It's like, so what is this building?
That part never made sense.
No, they just wanted the cool... they wanted the cool fireworks for the final fight, and they wanted a big check from Pepsi.
Yeah.
That's it.
Because I think at some point they knew that they weren't going to get the money from the box office.
They knew what they had on their hands.
I think that they did.
I mean, Dakota.
Honestly.
Yeah, Dakota Johnson knew when she was doing press.
They all knew. The girlies tried to sell a little bit, but eventually it just became Dakota Johnson being like, yeah, I was in this movie. Let's talk about literally anything else.
So one other thing about it, too, because I was looking into it, it's directed by this S.J. Clarkson. She has never directed a movie before. This was her movie feature-length directorial debut. But she has done a lot of television, including one that stuck out to me, Prague, an episode of Succession from the first season. You might know it as Tom's Bachelor Party.
Yeah. Oh my God, that one's so good.
I know, right?
Yeah, bad material. Sony's got a problem on their hands.
They can't figure it out. I never saw Welcome to Carnage, but the first Venom was okay.
The first Venom was definitely serviceable.
Probably the first Amazing Spider-Man was fine, and then the second one, it kind of gets off the rails. Morbius got ridiculed the same way Madam Web did.
The problem is I think Sony got too big for its breeches because they had like instant success with revamping the Spider-Man
with Andrew Garfield, right? That one?
Yes, that first one. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of tapered off after the reception of the second Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movie. And then they went in with Marvel for the Tom Holland one. And then they did Spider-Verse, which was just like an unmitigated hit. But then they went back to the Spider-Man villain well. And it turns out like people don't give a shit about Morbius. So like unless the movie is compelling enough to carry the like campy canon of what Morbius is and what Madam Web is, like the movies are going to flop. They're not going to work. And they seem to just be stuck to this model of, no, we're going to make the Spider-Man villain six thing happen. And it's just, stop trying to make Fetch happen.
So they're featured and coming soon on the SonyPictures.com website is Darkness of Man, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme. So, you know, like a dad action movie. That's what that's going to be. Then there's In the Land of the Saints and Sinners, starring Liam Neeson. Okay, another dad action movie. The Garfield movie, where Chris Pratt voices Garfield for some reason. The Fourth Bad Boys. Scarlett Johansson, Channing Tatum, Fly Me to the Moon. Is that So, like, they venture...
That one's weird, the conceit of that one. It's like they're prepping to fake the moon landing in case the real moon landing doesn't work.
Okay, I've seen the trailers for that. So they definitely venture into movies that, like, you would be interested, but also ones that are like, what? Like, I just don't understand what they're going for exactly. Zachary Levi in Harold and the Purple
What are you saying?
I say crayon. But I almost read it as crayon or as crown. And some people actually do say crown, but they're wrong.
It's crayon.
Crayon. Poem, crayon. Why is people adding this extra sounds into these words?
Crayon.
Crayon.
You're saying crayon.
Crayon.
What? Crayon.
And I was bullied into switching to poem, but I'm not budging on crayon. Okay?
Okay.
So that's some of the... Oh, and Kraven the Hunter. That's another Spider-Man villain, right?
I know. And the only reason why I am excited about that one is because it's Aaron Taylor Johnson, and I will give him my money.
Yeah, apparently.
If he needs it.
You love Aaron Taylor Johnson.
I do.
Big fan of Kick-Ass?
Yeah, big man boobies. Big man boobies made me go, wah, wah.
So, Madam Web... No, you don't need to check it out. And it was funny. Our TV stayed on Netflix or whatever, but the next time I opened... Either the TV or Netflix, it was still on the Madam Web screen. And it was like, did you like it? Rate it now. And I was like, nah.
I promise you don't want me to rate this right now.
I'll send our podcast to Netflix. There we go.
Someone will listen. Netflix is interested in Chops TV.
The next two movies were a little bit more just me watching while you took a nap. My Best Friend's Exorcism, which this one I intentionally watched while you were sleeping because... I knew that you weren't that interested, but I had just read the book, so...
But I was confused, because wasn't it a show?
No, it just kind of looked like a show, but it was made by the same people who made Happy Death Day and Totally Killer.
Oh, I would have watched that. I thought it was a TV show, so that's why I said, nah.
It probably actually would have been a little bit better as a TV show, at least for me, because I had just read the book, and I thought they... cut out things that are like, oh, I would have liked to see. But it was also nice to, you know, just see a few of the things adapted to the screen. My biggest complaint with it, though, and I had this with Totally Killer as well, is like that one, she goes back in time, whatever, right? They like playing around with the idea that it's in the 80s, but it's such a weird balance that do you go full on into it and really like ham it up that it's the 80s, or do you do it like they did where it's like, yeah, it's in the 80s. There's a few things that are there, but you wouldn't have to make too many drastic changes for this movie to be in, say, 2003 and star alongside Madam Web.
from what I understand of the book, I think it would have been better if they just went full 80s. You know?
Yeah, I think so too.
Like, just do it.
The pop culture of the 80s is very important in the book. Each chapter title is the name of a classic 80s song.
Yeah.
And I didn't quite get that vibe. I mean, there's a soundtrack. Maybe I'm just used to 80s music, so the soundtrack didn't, like, stand out to me as, like, oh, I haven't heard this song in a while. I've probably heard that song in the last week.
It's part of the reason why, like, 80s nostalgia hits so good. It scratches, like, a very specific itch because the culture... pop culture of the 80s is a very specific to that decade. It doesn't like cross genres the way that like the 60s or even the 70s did.
No, that's a big part of it. And like, I mean, a lot of those acts are still around. You know, we just saw Motley Crue this year. Well, I guess it was last year. It was within the last year. Like there's a lot of those people that are still like active. Not that there aren't bands from the 60s and 70s that are still active, but it's really just the really big acts that you still hear about nowadays. Not, I mean, Motley Crue, I guess, is a really big act. But yeah, there's something about the 80s that's really easy to also like iconographize because of how consumer-based the decade was.
Yeah.
So there's so many little products. Swatches was in the book. The cheap little watches that kids used to have. That was the other thing. They were just like throwing Tab soda cans around as like set dressing. And it's like, yeah, but if you're not doing anything with the Tab soda, then... it doesn't mean anything. It's just, remember this from the 80s? I think that something like Stranger Things actually does hit it really well. And that's why that first season is so effective.
That first season is so good. I wish they would just stop making that goddamn show.
We looked it up and the kids are all like 19 to 22 now. All of them. All the young ones. The Joe Keery's in his 30s. Like, they're not kids anymore. So you're not like... what's it going to look like with all these 20-year-olds riding bikes around fighting monsters? It's a completely different vibe than what the show promised.
Yeah, and weird as hell is what it's going to look like.
I understand that the pandemic delayed it at one point, but like it's also been through then the writer's strike, and it just feels like there's been enough, even though it's such a big hit, that like, will this show die?
But is it such a big hit? It's only a big hit because it has like a very dedicated fan base that returns to it. But if we all collectively decided that last season was really dog shit, which it was.
Okay.
And we don't watch it.
Then it'll just go away. Well, we can't. It's too late for that.
Why?
If 4 was good enough for them to approve Stranger Things 5, then how would they go ahead and now decide not to do
it? I'm just saying they should pay the consequences for getting too greedy for monies.
Yeah, I think there is a chance that they just like completely shit the bed on the fifth season.
I think it's highly likely.
Yeah, I think it's also really, like a really hard story to tie up. Like they've made it too large, and how are they gonna?
After the writer's strike, like Netflix, normally I would not endorse this sort of behavior, but literally scrap the season and claim it on your taxes as a loss. Like it just, God, I can't stand it. I know I'm in the minority on this too, but it's like, how many times is Will going to get sucked back into the upside down and like,
well, now be like angry? The whole town is like turning
into the upside down.
I'm trying to remember what happened. I mean, that was 2 years ago.
I know.
When that season came out.
Yeah.
That was that week we had COVID. That was literally 2 years ago at the end of May.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And it's not even like fully in production yet, right?
I don't know.
It's probably still a year away.
That is nuts. If it's still in production, they need to just scrap the project.
It's going to be 3 years between your fourth and fifth season. I mean, that should only take, in total, 5 years. And you're going to have a three-year cap in the middle. Does it have a release date?
I don't know. Millie Bobby Brown is going to be fucking riding around on that bicycle pregnant, 7 months pregnant, about to pop. And she's going to be like, we have to go save Dad, Papa. Shut up. Shut up! No one cares about your Papa. Stop it.
With a 2025 wrap date, there is a chance that the show will debut in the latter half of 2025 or the early half of 2026, according to Forbes.
Oh, my God.
So I think Forbes would know. Yeah, so it could be close. It'll be 2.5 years, basically.
That's...
3.5 years, sorry. Three and a half.
That is crazy.
Yeah, that's too many years. And, like, yeah, are people still going to be interested? The first season came out when we lived on First Avenue. I had just graduated college.
Shout out First Avenue. Use a real one.
Back to My Best Friend's Exorcism. If you read the book, I think it is like, yeah, it's kind of cool to like see how the characters come to life. The girl in it, the non-possessed one, was the girl from eighth grade. I felt like I recognized her.
But she was in that House of Wax remake. No.
There was a House of Wax remake?
No.
Why would they remake a perfect movie?
It wasn't. Wait, didn't they remake it with Chad Michael Murray? Wasn't that a remake,
House of Wax? That's the one I was referring to, but after I said it, you're right. I think there is like a 60s House of Wax that was based on.
No, it was, oh gosh, it was the Chainsaw.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
Yeah, where they're all on the bus. Remember?
She was in that one? Okay.
Yeah, and then the sister gets decapitated in the Tesla or something.
I think that was, it might be one of two now, but I know for a fact it was the first movie I gave an F. On Chops movie reviews. On
eighth grade conference. Is great, though. She's good. She's a good actor, but...
Yeah. So, it's not a great movie, and I could see how some people wouldn't like it. I think it does a good job of mixing kind of the comedia, and that's... They're good at this. Like, whatever. Maybe it's the directors. Maybe it's this group that makes these movies, but they're good at that line where, like, it is still, like, spooky to a certain degree. Yeah. And, like, creepy and stuff, and they have that stuff in there, but it's also a little lighthearted and kind of fun to watch. So,
I might give it a whirl.
If you like 80s stuff, especially if you've read the book, I say go watch it, but it's not 100% necessary. I believe we watched it on Prime just recently, so it should be available on there. But I don't know. It's hard to tell now because you have that Stars subscription. So, I never know exactly what's
on
Prime.
It's the season of the subscriptions. All my shows are coming back right now.
Oh, yeah. Bridgerton. How'd you like Bridgerton?
Bridgerton Part 1. Part 1, Season 3. I stan. I have no choice but to stan. It's in my contract. If I don't stan, the lawyers will be serving me papers. So I have no choice but to enjoy it. I am
the podcast
hesitant.
This week should have just been you trying to explain the family trees and stuff of Bridgerton, which you tried.
I tried. It took an hour and a half and we didn't even get through season two. So you didn't even know that Bridgerton was the name of the family. You thought they lived in Bridgerton.
How is that crazy?
It just is. I don't know what to tell you.
Even Kit's like, yeah, that's a little ridiculous.
But I'm a little hesitant to give my full opinions on it until the second part of the season comes out. And this is honestly my biggest gripe with the show as it stands right now. And it's not the show's fault. The show is doing everything right. It's this fucking release model that they're testing out right now where they'll do the first half of the season and then wait 3 weeks and do the second half of the season. The problem with this is, especially with a show like Bridgerton where it's all about like the romance and the suspense of that and like keeping that train rolling.
Well, it's a soap opera and soap operas are famously daily.
Yes.
And that's the point. They grab people in because, ooh, I have to see what happens next, and it's just tomorrow. Now, Bridgerton's popular enough. People are obviously going to watch it, but you're right about that. That, like, people are going to not only lose some of the interest that they have right now just because time just dulls interest in things, but also they're going to forget.
Yeah, and a lot of people have already made up their minds about like what this season is based off the first four episodes because we have a whole second half chunk of the season to get to. By the time people revisit, it's going to be really hard to convince people to either like sympathize with certain characters or like, you know what I mean? Just after that time, like people all have already made up their mind about what this show is this season. And it doesn't really get us to like a place of like, having the full story, then we can converse on the internet about like what the actual meat and potatoes of the story were. Because right now we only have half of it to work with.
The one good thing about Netflix is they are streamer through and through. They care about subscribers. They do not care how they get you. They just want that number to remain the highest number among all the streamers. And they want to keep growing subscribers. So I don't fear this as much with Netflix, but this type of release schedule on something like Max, especially Max, because Warner Brothers is a freaking mess. I would fear that it would come out. Like you said, people would talk about it when it's only half finished. And then people higher ups would want to tinker with the ending. Oh, we don't want another Game of Thrones ending on our hand. People wouldn't want this. So we have to maybe reshoots or something like that. Like I said, I don't think Netflix cares enough to do that because they make literally anything and just kind of seems like they just let the people make it. Their whole thing is as much content as possible, as long as it gets subscribers. And Bridgerton does that. But that release schedule, I think, goes through. Would you rather have it drop all at once or weekly installments?
Now, that's a good question. I think with especially romantic shows, and maybe not so much with Bridgerton, because the way that they pace out the seasons often are main couple is together by the mid-season, right? So it's not like we're waiting until the end. Last season was a bit of an exception just because of like the dynamics of that couple. But season one, the couples were already together. Season two, our main couple is already decided that they're in love. So it's a little bit harder week to week to keep that momentum going. So for Bridgerton specifically, I would like that all dumped on me at once. I literally want to suffocate under the weight of Penelope's big, beautiful, fat titties on my chest.
All right.
We can cut that out, too.
Explicit tag? We've already hit it today, anyways.
Yeah, we have. Just leave it in. Who cares?
There will be a more in-depth full breakdown once the full season comes out.
Maybe we'll do the family tree breakdown then. Oh, and we'll see if you remember anything. We'll see if you retained any information from our hour and a half long conversation.
What was really mixing me up is season two is the one I've seen enough of that I had a vague idea of some of the characters, and I had no idea that there were flashbacks. So that was really throwing, or was it that in, maybe that was in Queen Charlotte? When does the guy die from the bee stings? I've seen that scene.
That's the second season.
Okay.
And that is a flashback.
Yeah. So when you were like, this guy's dead, but then you were like, this guy died of the bees. And I was like, no, that was a young guy when he died of the bees.
You just kept saying, so what's with the bees? So who's the bee guy?
There are a lot of bees. For Bridgerton?
It's almost like Batman, where Batman's afraid of bats, so he takes it on as a symbol. But in show, they don't really have like bees all over the place. It's
what
just
if
like
Lady Whistledown was also a vigilante by night, beating people up,
stinging them with bees,
and then she could do the Spider-Man thing where she pretends like she's covering the stories, but really she just is, you know, where he sells like his photos back. Yeah. She could just make crime stories up by beating people up and then be like, wow, scandalous, this guy got beaten up.
Scandal, yeah. No, that's fair.
Speaking of scandals, this would be a scandal if it actually happened in real life, but it's also completely implausible. I finally got to watch Ricky Stenicki, and you watched about half of it. A movie that I asked you a few times, do you want to watch this? I kind of want to see this. I like Zac Efron. I think John Cena's an interesting comedic actor as he's made that turn. And you kept turning me down. So I finally said, we're watching it. And it's not good. It's not terrible. It is...
Would you say serviceable?
Well, it's more perplexing than anything because it like tries to like send a message at the end, which this isn't a Farrelly Brothers movie. It's only directed by one of them, Peter Farrelly. And maybe it's because it's him that like it almost like tries to like send some sort of message at the end and like show that our like the characters aren't really supposed to grow. Even though Harry and Lloyd do have a character arc in Dumb and Dumber, probably the Farrelly Brothers' best movie. Not really. It's not about that. And this is about like people learning their lesson and coming together and we should try to clean stuff up. But if you look at Peter Farrelly, his solo work is crazy. Like the combination of these things. So movie 43.
Oh, God.
Widely panned as one of the worst movies ever and probably would be picked on a very short list of worst movies of the 2000s, right?
Mm-hmm.
For people who don't know, it's got a huge cast of all these famous people doing just terribly...
Isn't it like anthology like too, where none of the sketches like
they might interconnect them at the end somehow. I don't even know if I ever finished movie 43, but it was on Netflix for a long time back in the day. His next solo one is Green Book, the winner of Best Picture. Isn't that insane?
That is crazy.
So he has another one called The Greatest Beer Run Ever. That was the other Zac Efron one that was on like Apple TV. So apparently he likes working with Zac Efron. But yeah, his two movies before these last two with Zac Efron are movie 43 and Green Book. And on Wikipedia, there are notes next to the movies. Both of them won a fair amount of awards. Green Book, Academy Award for Best Picture, Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay, Golden Globe Award for Best Motion Picture, on and on, a bunch of awards. Movie 43,
Rez.
Similarly, segments The Pitch, The Catch, Truth or Dare. So that's just listing some of the sketches in it. And then the Golden Raspberry Award for Worst Director and the Golden Raspberry Award for Worst Picture. 5 years later, he directed like something that swept the Academy Awards.
Just to prove that he could. He doesn't make, to me, that says, like, I'm not making stupid because I am stupid. I'm making stupid because I am so good at making movies.
Maybe.
That it's a test to see how bad of a movie I could make.
It's just, yeah, it was, when I read that, I was very weirded out. But it made sense with how Ricky Stenicki goes. For those who don't know, it's this group of three friends who've been friends since they were kids. Whenever they got in trouble as kids or they needed an excuse for something, they would say, oh, our friend Ricky Stenicki did it. Or, oh, my friend Ricky Stenicki has this event. Or they use, he has cancer, so they're going to support their friend in this movie when they're adults. But like a reason to eschew your responsibilities and just go do something fun. So they go to Atlantic City. They meet this guy who is a parody, like explicit 80s rocker with really elaborate costumes for somebody who appears to be in a one-man group of it, and also claims to be a trained actor. Turns out he is a really good actor. So they are, one of them's getting married, or no, he's a baby shower, and they miss the baby shower because they're in Atlantic City, and they're like, well, we need to finally meet Ricky. Like, what's going on? Like, how, why is this guy always doing this stuff? Because they get so far along in their lie that they have to say that actually the cancer was made up, but Ricky's real, and people are starting to suspect it at this point, so they decide to hire him as an actor. He's very well prepared, actually, almost too well prepared, and then you learn, as the movie goes on, spoiler alerts for Ricky Stenicki, that he legally changed his name to Ricky Stenicki. And because they wrote like a Bible for him of like all the details of his life, he's living his life as if that was his lived life because his life was so crappy before that he's tried to change his life. But they're like, yeah, but you just like learned some things that we wrote down in a book. You can't be an executive at like our financial firm, which is where he gets hired because his boss is at the baby shower or whatever event it was that Ricky Stenicki shows up at. Okay.
Wasn't it the circumcision?
The bris. Because the That's bris, what it was.
Yeah, because then he has to step in because he was doing that sort of charity
that's
work.
That's what it was. They wanted to skip the baby shower and they missed the birth. The birth was a little early and that's why they felt bad. So then, yeah. Well, Ricky has to come to the bris then if he made you miss the birth. That's, you're right. That's how it happens. But then as it goes on, it stops being as overtly comedic and it's still trying to weave in the jokes, but they get to the point where like, they know that they have to give it up. One friend really doesn't. One friend wanted to tell the truth the entire time. Zac Efron's in the middle and finally starting to go towards, it's just better to tell the truth. Because he loses his fiance or long-term girlfriend, but like they're definitely on track to be married. That's what you're supposed to think of these characters. And she is a news reporter. And she's like, oh, for my Hero of the Week segment, I'm going to do Ricky Stenicki. Because one of the things to make it easier to lie about him was they made him this great guy who's always doing environmental work and always helping out charities, right? So she's like, well, that sounds like a great hero. Turns out that's all a farce, and she actually knew that Ricky Stenicki was fake all along.
Because women aren't dumb. Lest men forget, women are not that gullible.
It's just a bunch of men fumbling with incoherent stories. Yes. And they do have a few of the female characters who are like, I don't believe this.
Yeah, that's how men get caught cheating. They like start to believe their own sauce, like the lie.
Yeah, well, and then they stack.
Yeah, and then they stack it and then it becomes untenable.
Because the one friend wanted to tell the truth and like halfway through it, they just said, actually, the cancer was a lie from Ricky. But Ricky's still real.
Yeah.
So that's how they get caught in. Yeah, we got to make him real. Okay. At the end, though, it gets really weird, in my opinion.
So I fell asleep.
Yes.
To be clear.
What exactly is the message here, Peter? So Zac Efron gives it all up because they're at this, like, country club with a company that they're trying to do a big merger with. You know, the company has to do a merger, classic movie plot. And they're going to show his Hero of the Week segment on the news. And Zac Efron gives up the secret and then he gets fired and William H. Macy, his boss, is like, don't even bother coming back to your office. But then Ricky shows up and he the segment starts. And it's actually still about Ricky Stenicki, but it's really about Rock Hard Rob becoming Ricky Stenicki. Mm. And they try to play it off as this, like, you should If you want to, just go and do it. Recreate your life. Change your life. Change your name. You can do whatever you want. You can be whoever you want. And that's why he's the hero of the week. The other company that's there for the merger is really upset because Ricky was starting to like lead the merger talks. And they're like, wait, what the hell is going on? This guy's a phony, blah, blah, blah. But then they see the segment. And one of them, somebody who apparently is like the lead executive or at least very high up, is like, this is exactly the kind of outside the box thinking that we want to see. Merger on. So it works out. And then like Ricky gets to still work there. And Zac Efron is back, even though I don't know. It would probably depend on like all the things he got involved in. But there's probably a fair amount of fraud when you're dealing with like real financial things.
Yeah.
To be somebody who's not credentialed in any way. So I got to the end and I woke you up and I was like, it got really weird.
It was like, how weird could it have gotten? Is it like zombie shark weird? And you're like, no, it's pretty strange.
Well, it's earnest too.
Yeah.
Like it's trying to like pass this message off. At least that's the vibe I was getting, which is why, yeah, I was like, the Farrelly brothers always kind of, it's very like wink at you about like the character arcs and the progression that these characters make.
To be clear,
this one isn't. They're like, these guys learned their lesson, and Ricky Stenicki actually is inspirational.
This is going to change my opinion of this movie.
Okay.
To be clear, did the Farrelly brothers do Dumb and Dumberer?
I don't think they did Dumb and Dumberer, but I think they did Dumb and Dumber 2. So they definitely did Dumb and Dumber 2. Does not look like they did Dumb and Dumberer. Would you like me to check out who directed Dumb and Dumberer?
I would love that. For those that don't know, Dumb and Dumberer, perfect film, no notes.
Dumb and Dumberer, When Harry Met Lloyd. Well, that says it was directed by them, but it doesn't. I think that's a Google mix-up of, because Dumb and Dumberer and Dumb and Dumber aren't that different. Okay, now I'm on the official IMDb page. Director Troy Miller.
Oh.
What else did Troy Miller do, you might ask? Directed some episodes of Flight of the Conchords. Directed Arrested Development. Directed Jack Frost with Michael Keaton. So, wow. What a high watermark for this guy.
What a crazy movie that Jack Frost one is. It's like crazy horny for like a kid's movie about Jack Frost.
There's also another one from the 90s that's like a killer snowman, and it's also called Jack Frost because I don't think Jack Frost, it's probably like public domain, that name. And I definitely got confused a few times in the video store, but I wonder how many people like got home and thought they were watching the Michael Keaton movie and it turned out to be this like cheap schlocky killer snowman movie. You gotta be careful. Streamers.
You do have to be careful.
Especially on streamers where this cover looks fine. No.
It's Winnie the Pooh. Psych. It's Winnie the Pooh's on a murderous rampage.
So I think out of like curiosity, watch Ricky Stenicki, but I do not think it accomplishes what it sets out to accomplish.
John Cena performance, is it a launching pad for the rest of his career or just a misstep, you think?
I don't think it's a misstep. He's probably actually the best part of the movie. The character's okay. Really, that like his humor is really like the way he presents himself is really sincere. So it's kind of dry in a sense, but also like heightened. Like he lacks tact, even though he's like learned all this stuff about Ricky Stenicki. He still comes from that background of like just being like a drunk out in Atlantic City who performs dirty songs. So every once in a while he says things that just rub people the wrong way, but he's so true to himself. This is again where it's like trying to like send a message. He's so true to himself that it eventually goes past people. Like people are apprehensive at first, and then they're like, "He's not being mean. He's just
being
telling
Ricky.
He's just telling the truth." And so that's why the boss likes him. The girl with the long hair, who he kind of insults, and then he's getting her back, but then her long hair gets stuck in the bowling ball. They're at a bowling alley. but yeah, I would say that, and for me, and I think for you, I think the funniest joke is when he's trying to outrun those guys and he's in the Britney Spears outfit and he's like very careful with his bottle of Jack because he's an alcoholic, and he jumps out of the window and lands flat on his feet and just drops the bottle. And that's it. They don't even follow up on like what he does after that. That's just the end of that scene. You're just like, I guess he got away. I also did like when he shows up to do his acting role and they're like, he's drunk right now. This guy's such an alcoholic. This isn't going to work. No, he's actually such an alcoholic that he's going through severe withdrawal and is just like flop sweat, throwing up all over the place. that little like bait and switch I thought was kind of funny. So, again, I think in a curious way, it's worth watching. That's our weird episode of random stuff that we watched over the last week.
You're welcome.
Yes, you're welcome. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Chops TV is made possible by people who subscribe to podcasts and viewers like you.